This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Welcome to the Mom Room Podcast. My name is Renee Rina, and I am definitely the mom friend you have always wanted.
Okay, hello. Welcome to Thursday's episode. Today, I'm talking to my sister because, as most of you know, if you follow me on Instagram, she has been going through IVF for a long freaking time. She also lives up north, which, like Northern Ontario, which means there are no fertility clinics in that area. So every time she has an appointment, she's driving to Toronto, which is like a 3.5-4 hour drive. And there's a lot of appointments involved with fertility treatments and whatnot. So I thought we would just chat about her journey, or I guess her and her fiance's journey to getting pregnant and everything that they've done, and kind of like a general timeline. And it's interesting because everyone has a different story, which we can talk about a little bit later, but this is her experience and her story. So my first question, Liza, is, do you remember like when you were thinking, oh yeah, maybe we should try for a baby now? Like, when was that? 'Cause right now it's 2021 and you're how old?
32.
You're 32. So like when was that?
So in 2017, I remember exactly, because we decided, we talked about it, we had the big conversation, and then we were going to try, like, I started tracking my cycles, and we, like, timed intercourse and, like, did all that fun stuff, which eventually ends up feeling like a job and no fun. So yeah. We did that for a year, because most doctors, like, after 6 months, I went and talked to my doctor and was like, nothing's happening. Like, I was getting really frustrated. And he said, well, you have to try for at least a year and then we'll like talk about fertility stuff. So we had to keep doing that for another 6 months before we could get referred to see anybody with that has to do with fertility.
Just so people know what the initial testing is, it's like blood work, the internal ultrasound.
Yeah. So like a big one for the blood work is the AMH, which is essentially tells you the ability of the woman to produce eggs to be fertilized for pregnancy.
Okay.
So that's a big one that they're looking at. And if it's low, then they could, that triggers them to think that that might be the reason why you're not conceiving.
Okay.
So mine was a little bit on the low side.
Okay.
But the second time that I had it done, it was normal. So not sure, I'd have to look into it more, like not sure how that happens or if that can happen, if it's like changes, I have no idea. But so that was the case in my case. And then Mike had a little bit of low motility, meaning that like the semen weren't moving like efficiently.
Okay.
And
that's it.
But other than that, everything else was normal.
So
like they thought an IUI would suffice.
Okay. So that was the same as me. Like I did all the testing and then everything came back normal, which is kind of frustrating because you're like, you want to know why it's not happening. It's like one of those things where not getting any kind of result, like it's kind of a good thing, but at the same time, you're like, you wish it was something that could just be fixed right away so that you can have a baby. But anyways, so yeah, all my testing and pre's testing was normal as well. And then that was the next step for us, was to do the IUI, which is just putting like turkey baster stuff. Like, this is the thing about IUI.
There's a little bit more to it.
Okay,
There's a little bit more to it.
So you can do the washing of the semen, which is...
Right, yeah, okay. So they select like the quality semen so that they have a better chance of actually fertilizing the egg.
And they're monitoring your ovulation?
Yeah, and so they gave me a drug called letrozole, which makes you super ovulate.
Okay.
So like you're producing more than just one egg, which is like typical for a female. You just produce one egg each cycle, one to two.
Oh.
So, but this time it would be like, you know, up to seven or like whatever, however well you react to the drug. So it increases your chances of getting pregnant. But even with that, like I ended up technically getting pregnant with the IUI, but then having a chemical, which is like a really, really early miscarriage.
Okay. So that's what a chemical pregnancy is. It's like it happened, but it just didn't
like there
stick.
Was implantation enough that your body started producing a little bit of HCG.
Okay.
But then it just terminated itself.
Okay.
For whatever reason.
Okay. See, I feel like chemical pregnancy is like not a good term to use because it makes it sound like it was not there in the first place. I don't know. I don't like that word.
Some doctors, yeah. So that's like the medical term for it, because they don't want to say miscarriage because there was no like real fetus there yet. So
anyways,
it's a tough one. A lot of people don't use the term chemical, but I'm not sure how else, except for really early miscarriage, I guess you could say.
Okay. So that was that. What else did I have to say about IUI? I don't remember. Anyways, so we had our appointment to go down to Toronto to do that, basically. Because what is it, like $500 or something?
Yeah, it depends, because you can do it medicated or you could do it unmedicated.
Okay. And so...
Mine was medicated.
IUI is not covered by OHIP, is it? I don't think so.
Oh, that... I don't think so. I was just looking through my paperwork and I believe we just paid straight up.
Yeah, because I think that's what we were going to do as well. But I don't know. Maybe there's a way to do it where it's covered, but that's not what I remember.
It might be one round. I'm not sure. Okay. To be honest, I'm not sure on that one.
Okay, so there was IUI. So yeah, anyways, what I was going to say is we were going to go do that as well. And then the day that I got the email for the appointment to go down to Toronto was the day that we found out that we were pregnant with Milo, which was kind of like so random. But
crazy.
So you did the one IUI and then moved into IVF, or did you do two IUIs?
So it's such a blur. Like, I don't remember exactly if we just tried medicated and then timed intercourse and then went to the IUI, but I know we only did one IUI and then went straight to IVF. And we had to kind of ask the doctor to do that. They wanted to do a few more IUIs,
okay,
like at least three they were suggesting. But our decision was to just go straight to IVF, and they honored that decision, and that's what we did.
Did you not want to do more IUIs? You just didn't think that it would work? Or?
Yeah, like, so essentially with some of our results, and if you look at the statistics of IUI versus IVF,
okay,
like, you're getting the job done a lot quicker with IVF.
Okay.
And IUI, like, the stats just aren't very promising.
Okay.
So
interesting.
We had already been trying for like a year and a half by then, so.
I know, that's the thing that is mind-blowing is the time, especially like you're traveling to Toronto, you have to wait each cycle, like,
oh, the waiting is insane. Like, you wait for appointments, you wait when you're at the office, you wait for beta results, you wait for, like, you just, there's waiting at every step of the way. It's actually insane.
Yeah.
Like, you're just constantly waiting for something.
Yeah. So, okay. So when you decided to do the IVF, it was through the same clinic. So can you, like, what is the first step of IVF? Like, you live in Northern Ontario. Your clinic is in Toronto. So you're waiting, like, I know just from talking to you, like, usually you wait to get your period. And then that is considered, like, day one. And then they do certain things on each day of your cycle.
Right. So before doing IVF, they still wanted to redo all the tests that they had done. Oh. So they did like the, it's called a hysterosonogram. Oh, so it's essentially where they push saline through your fallopian tubes, and they, while they're doing an ultrasound to check for any blockages, and then they can also check the anatomy of the uterus, like the lining and everything, to see if there's any cysts or anything like that going on. So I've had two of those in total, which they're like really uncomfortable.
You're cramping. They're not nice.
I think you had it done too, right? Yeah. So that, and then all the blood work. Mike got another semen analysis done, and then they checked for like Tay Sachs and thyroid, and that's kind of considered like basic testing for IVF.
I'm assuming there's testing to do for IVF that they have to make sure that you're like healthy enough, or, you know, so that they don't want to go and do all that for nothing, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they just want to make sure that like the body's functioning well enough that it's going to be able to hold a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. When I had my sonogram done, they found a cyst in my uterus. So I had to have what's called a hysteroscopy.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a surgery where they go in and remove the cyst. So I had that done prior to my first round of IVF.
Okay, now, maybe you don't know this answer, but like medically speaking, this is the thing about infertility. They find everything because they're looking for everything. I'm sure many people have a cyst in their uterus and it means nothing, and they go on to have a million pregnancies and it's fine. But it's like, now they found that cyst, and it's like, oh, just in case, like, we better do this. And so you go and have that procedure, then you have to recover from that procedure, wait, and like, go on.
Yeah. So essentially it's all an odds game.
Yeah.
So if there's a cyst in your uterus and that embryo tries to implant on the cyst, then you're not going to have a successful pregnancy. So that's why they remove the cyst, so that there's more room in the uterus for that embryo to implant. So it's just all about odds. Like, they don't want to risk that, like, wasting that embryo.
Yeah. Okay.
That you've worked so hard to make in the first place.
And it's time to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode of The Mom Room and providing me with samples. Thank you, Claritin. Guys, I am starting to come to terms with the fact that I do suffer from allergies. I used to think, oh, I just have really bad sinuses. No, you have allergies. So let's talk a little bit about my symptoms. I wake up with not a stuffed nose, but like, I have to blow my nose constantly. So it's like it's producing mucus and I have to keep blowing my nose. It's all itchy. The palate, like the roof of my mouth, is itchy in the mornings, and I'm trying to like scratch it with my tongue. It's really irritating. And the insides of my ears get itchy. It's one thing to have those symptoms when I'm just hanging out at home, but for example, yesterday I was at book club and my nose kept getting so tingly and itchy, and I kept having to go to the bathroom to blow my nose. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter or ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. This episode is brought to you by Little Spoon. I'm just going to be honest here. As a busy parent, it's important to keep your life simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Nobody ever told me how stressful mealtimes can be. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage they are in. Their goal is simple. It's to keep your kid healthy, but also to make it the easiest part of your day so that you can cut through all the drama of mealtime without compromise. Little Spoon's baby blends are fresh, organic baby food from single ingredients to multi-textured purees to take the stress out of starting solids. Their biteables are transition-to-table early finger food meals that are cut to size to promote easy self-feeding with healthy, balanced foods that are free of artificial junk. Little Spoon's plates are for toddlers and big kids. They taste amazing, and even the pickiest eaters will love them. Think hidden veggie mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and adventurous eats like pot stickers, gnocchi, and more. Little Spoon also offers smoothies, lunchers, and snacks. Did I mention it gets delivered right to your door? It is so flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. You can check out the menu and change up what you order every single time. The price is right, the quality is unmatched. Your kids will love it. It's a huge win-win for your family. So simplify your kiddo's mealtime with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/momroom and enter our code MOMROOM at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You guys know I have been very intentional with what we've been eating lately. I'm looking at protein, I'm looking at sugar content, and avoiding things like artificial ingredients or colorings. Milo used to always want pancakes or waffles in the mornings, and now he is getting into cereal, and I'm so excited because Magic Spoon is the perfect option. Their variety pack has 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 grams of carbs per serving. They're made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and I'm just so happy that he's getting a good amount of protein before he goes off to school. And it's a great snack for me and my husband too, because 13 to 14 grams of protein in the cereal, now you add a high protein milk, you're set. That is such a high protein snack or meal. I should also mention that it is gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So go to magicspoon.com/momroom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOMROOM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/momroom and use the code MOMROOM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
So the first step of IVF, which I always forget about, is the egg retrieval.
Yeah.
So it's, and this is, okay, this is something that I did not know. So if you're listening, maybe you don't know this either. In Ontario, at least, and I'm sure there's other provinces, the government covers, like our healthcare system will cover one round of IVF. I thought one round meant one transfer. So like when you had your first transfer, I was like, okay, that's the one that's covered. And then you kept having transfers. And I'm like, where the fuck is she getting all this money? Like, who's paying for all these transfers?
Bala.
Yeah. But I didn't realize that one round is all the transfers based on how many embryos you were able to create from the first egg retrieval. To do the egg retrieval, first of all, like, explain that. It's all, like, the injections and stuff?
Yeah, so lots of meds to essentially, like, stimulate your ovaries and your follicles so that you're producing a whole bunch of eggs.
Yeah. And then...
So it's, like, it's a more intense version of the pill, the letrozole, that I was taking for the IUI. It's just a way more intense version of that.
And so that's, like, needle injections?
Yeah. Yeah.
For how
and
long?
Mixing the drugs and for, I can't exactly remember, like a week or more than that, maybe a week and a half.
Okay.
And then you go in and then they keep checking your follicles to make sure that they're maturing. And then once they've matured to a certain size, then they can be confident enough that that follicle's holding a mature egg that they can retrieve. So they have to wait till you, like, most of your follicles are a certain millimeters, usually 17 to like 21 millimeters.
Okay. And is the egg retrieval when they do the shot to stimulate ovulation, or is that IVF, the transfer?
So they give you the HCG shot, which is to get you to release those eggs, but they time it very specifically so that you're not releasing the eggs before they can get in there and retrieve them.
Oh, okay. Oh my God.
But it helps. I think it helps to mature the eggs. So it's like within 48 hours or something, you're back in the office for your retrieval.
Okay. And so,
yeah,
obviously your partner has to be there at the same time to give a sperm sample. And then that is how they create the embryos outside of the human body, which is mind blowing.
Yeah. So they take the eggs. The eggs have to mature to an appropriate size, I guess. And then they select the best sperm. And we did ICSI, which is, I don't know what the fancy name is, intracytoplasmic something something, mm-hmm. where they take the sperm and inject it directly into the egg.
As opposed to
As opposed to just letting the sperm swim around the petri dish and infertilize the egg itself.
I can't.
Yeah.
So do you remember how many eggs they got?
Yeah. So they retrieved 12 eggs from me, which is a pretty average, pretty good number, something you should be happy about, I guess. And 10 of them matured and fertilized. 8 of them reached the blastocyst stage, which is the stage they need to freeze them. But we got our embryos PGS tested. So pre-implantation genetic screening, essentially, to check the chromosomes to make sure that we are getting euploid embryos.
And that's an extra thing that you pay for, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the, one of the most expensive. It was pretty expensive to get that. So that is a huge barrier to some people actually getting them tested and not getting them tested.
Do you remember how much it was?
I think it's about $4,000.
Okay.
Dollars. $4,000 to $5,000, yeah.
Wow. To end, at the end of the day, how many of your embryos were good enough to be transferred?
So we had 5 come back normal, euploid, and then 1 mosaic and 1 abnormal. Now, I'm not 100% sure what the abnormal is. I didn't think they kept them, but I guess they do, because in the odd time they do transfer them.
Okay.
Because sometimes they can be a healthy pregnancy.
Interesting.
So I think it depends on the doctor, from what I was reading, whether or not they like to transfer abnormal embryos.
And so that's the retrieval. You are all excited about how many embryos you get. And then, some people, I know people that got one, went through the whole egg retrieval process, got one good embryo. And so had one transfer that they could do. And again, it's in Ontario, at least, they'll cover one round, which is how many embryos did you get from that first egg retrieval? And so they're left with just one embryo. So you had 8?
I believe I had 7 that were normal.
Considered healthy.
Yeah, but the one abnormal, so maybe 6.
Okay.
I think I've got 2 left, essentially.
Okay. So
but I just emailed the clinic to double check all that.
So how many,
to be honest,
you did your first transfer? So that's the same kind of thing. You wait to get your period, and then that's considered day 1. And then you have to go to the clinic on day 2 or something, which is nuts because you're up north. So, you have an idea when your period's going to come, but you're never 100%. So you just have to up and go to Toronto now.
And to after the egg retrieval, you're not really sure when you're going to get your period.
Yeah.
Some people, it messes up their cycle. So they're waiting on that too.
And so the transfer is, I know there's a bunch of different ways to do the transfer with regard to what medications people are going to take.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes I know your first few transfers, you were doing the injections to promote ovulation, but this last one you did it with a natural ovulation, right?
So you're thinking more of the stim cycle, which is prior to the egg retrieval. So it's called a protocol, the medications that you're on. So everyone has a different protocol depending on what your issues are.
Okay.
So for my first transfer, they did kind of like the basic protocol, like baby aspirin, 5 milligrams of prednisone, and then we started the progesterone injections, which are the big ones that go into the muscle.
Okay.
And then once that, so that my first transfer essentially ended in an ectopic, which is like a 1-2% chance of that happening. And then to treat that, we had to use what's called methotrexate. We had two options. The doctor gave us two options. We could use methotrexate, which is an injection, and it essentially stops the cells from dividing. So it miscarries the pregnancy. Yeah, it miscarries the pregnancy. And then you have to wait 3 months before attempting to do another transfer or getting pregnant at all. Like, you have to wait those 3 months to get the medicine out of your system. Or you could have surgery to remove the tube that the ectopic pregnancy was in. And then after that, you can kind of, you don't have, there's no waiting period. Okay. So essentially they left that decision up to us, and we decided to go with the less invasive treatment.
So after you take that medication that like miscarries the pregnancy for you, your tube is viable still?
No. So they said that once you have an ectopic in your tube, like, it's kind of ruined at that point.
That's wow.
And it increases your chances of having another one.
Weird. Yeah.
It like ruins that tube.
Yeah. Okay. So that was like such a random thing to happen. Like you said, it's not very common, especially in IVF. And then the second one, so then you took the medication, you had to wait 3 more months to do the next one. And so you did your second transfer, and that one, if I remember, was a chemical pregnancy. So early miscarriage, which every time they're doing a transfer, it's like all the needles, all the appointments, like coming to Toronto.
Go through everything from start to finish over and over again.
Like, ugh. And then the third transfer was...
which I did right back to back. So I did transfers 2 and 3 back to back. Because I could, when it ends in a chemical, you just essentially wait for your period to come, and then you can start again right away.
Yeah.
So I started again right away for my third one, and that one too ended in chemical. So at this point, the doctors were going, okay, so you have like 100% pregnancy rate, like you're getting pregnant. We just got to keep you pregnant. So that's when they started thinking about like immune issues. So essentially for the fourth round, I switched doctors. So I left, I was originally with the fellows. So I had like a different doctor every like 6 months, and I switched to the head honcho guy, essentially like the big guy. And he put me on what they call like a kitchen sink protocol. So it's like everything, like they just threw everything at me. Which is like, they upped the prednisone to 10 milligrams. They did 5,000 units of Fragmin. We did intralipid infusions, platelet rich plasma, which is essentially where they take your blood and they separate the platelets from it. And then they re-inject those platelets into your uterus. And it's supposed to help with like healing and implantation. And then we also added Neupogen, which helps with like lessen the immune system. And then I had like on top of that, the regular meds, like the aspirin and the progesterone and vitamin D and a probiotic.
So this was so for like, the fourth transfer?
Yeah, which is until at this point successful.
Right. What, with all the drugs and everything, like what are some of the side effects that, because I feel like we hear like IVF, oh yeah, we did IVF, but people don't understand. I don't even think people understand like all the needles and the medications, but like how does that affect your body?
I'd say the medication that gave me the worst side effects personally was estrogen.
Okay.
Like it just threw my moods for a loop. Like I was watching commercials with like a puppy in it and like bawling my eyes out. Like one day there was a squirrel on the road that got hit by a car and I started bawling my eyes out. Like just estrogen was just like a real bitch. Like it was brutal. So on the fourth round, we didn't do estrogen.
Okay.
So it's like, it's kind of a natural cycle, but not really because of all the other meds that you're doing, like, it's not natural like you would think.
Yeah.
But we didn't use estrogen because my lining tended to thicken up normally.
Okay.
So we didn't.
Yeah, that's what it was.
We needed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so a transfer, you go in to, like, the doctor's, I'm assuming it looks kind of like an operating room. You lay down.
Yeah, like, I have, I think, like, I only know my clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go into the OR, there's all these small little waiting rooms, and each one of them has a massage chair in them. And you sit and wait there, and you, like, gown up, put your little scrub hat on and everything, and wait for, like, them, the nurses to come and get you and bring you into what they call the OR, which is where they do their procedures and stuff. So my clinic has its own OR. I think some other clinics use hospital ORs, so that experience would be much different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what that would be like, but...
But it's quick?
Ours is...
Like, you just...
The transfer takes, like, maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it only took 15 minutes for me because I did an HCG wash, which means they put HCG in your... Like, we did everything. So they put HCG in your uterus... And it's supposed to be like an espresso for the embryo, like to wake it up and get it ready to go and implanting.
Wow.
So you wait 5 minutes with that in there before they transfer the embryo.
Is that the first
Otherwise,
time that you
it
did
takes,
that?
We had done that a couple times.
Oh, okay.
And we also did embryo glue, which is like a substance that they put the embryo in. And it's supposed to help with implantation. But a lot of stuff in fertility, like they're still doing research on it. So it's not... Like, they can't say, like, yeah, this is definitely going to work. You just kind of have to roll the dice.
Well, and it's hard to tell if something works because you don't know why it didn't work, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to... Yeah, the fertility stuff is mind-boggling and frustrating at the same time because, like, there's not really answers usually, and
right, you don't get answers as to why it worked or why it didn't work.
Keep trying, and like you said, you're just like, okay, let's try everything. But at the end of the day, like, this last one was successful, but nobody knows why. It could just be like the odd chance, you know, like, you don't know why something works versus doesn't work unless there's something like glaringly obvious. What are you at right now currently?
What do you mean? Like, how far along?
Yeah.
7 weeks and 2 days.
And so you have one more appointment with the fertility clinic in Toronto?
Two to three more appointments.
Okay.
Depending on when they're going to let me go.
So you typically, if you're with a fertility clinic, you did IVF, at least at this clinic, they release people to their...
You graduate from your clinic at around 10 weeks.
Okay. And so then you would be transferred to either like a midwife or an OB in your actual hometown.
Yeah. And then that's it for the clinic. Yeah. They've done their job.
Wow. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you feeling? We'll just end with this. So how are you feeling right now?
Like, pretty good. I just actually... It's funny because I just got back from... You'd think that I would be done peeing on pregnancy tests, but I was at Shoppers Drug Mart and I was like just kind of standing there waiting to fill a prescription that I need, like the Neupogen that I need to inject. And I was like, oh, I wonder what the week's indicator test would say right now. So of course I went and bought two more pregnancy tests and peed on them just to make sure.
What did it say?
It said 3+, which is exactly what I was looking for.
Okay. So they
there's like
they
1 to 2, 2 to 3. What do you mean?
Like, the test won't say 7 weeks.
No. It just says 3+.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's the highest that you can get, just based on your HCG levels.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because now they don't test your HCG levels anymore, right?
No. Yeah. No. So I did 4 betas. A lot of clinics just do 2. And if it doubles, then they're happy with that. But my clinic, I think probably because of my history of, like, chemicals or early miscarriage... They wanted to keep checking.
Yeah.
So I did 4 betas and then they scheduled me for my first ultrasound after that.
Okay.
So I go at week 6 and 8 and 10 and then I'll see. And I'm excited for my 8-week ultrasound next week.
Do you have any symptoms right now? Like,
oh, I'm peeing all the time.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. I could eat a cow like literally all day. I could eat.
Yeah.
My boobs are sore. Oh, and I get weird dreams, like really weird dreams. You've been in some of them, which I've told you about, but that's for another day.
Okay. Well, that's great. Thanks for sharing your journey.
Sorry, I should come closer to the microphone. Thanks for sharing your journey with us.
Yeah.
This was helpful for some people who are probably wondering. Maybe there's some people listening that are about to start IVF, and so they're curious about how it all works. So thanks for chatting with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, bye.
Ciao.